The Himalayan nation of Nepal is undergoing fundamental political change. In the last few weeks, an autocratic king has been forced to yield power to a democratic government. Next, Bruce Silverman interviews a Nepali and a Portlander with longtime ties to the country.
This is Bruce Silverman, and today we have guests to talk about Nepal. One is a citizen of Nepal, and one is an American who has long ties with the country. First guest is Pemba Sherpa. Pemba, welcome to KBOO.
Well, thank you.
You're in America right now studying?
Yeah, I'm studying in PSU, and my major is communication.
Communications, okay. We're going to talk about radio in Nepal a little later on. And the press in general. And Bob Pierce is a longtime Portlander. You've spent a lot of time in Nepal.
I've been there, we guess it was about 20 times.
For what reason?
Mostly I was leading treks. Other times just traveling on my own or with other people.
And how did you meet Pemba?
I know his friends. And in fact, I know his sister and his brother, and I guess that's how I got to know him.
Pemba, I think most Americans know very little about Nepal. We're going to talk about the current political situation, which is pretty exciting. But first, let's just sort of identify the country. This is a mountainous country in Asia between India and China. Much of the country is mountainous. The Himalayas are there. Mount Everest, as you call it, Sagarmatha. And I will call it that from now on. How big a country is this compared to Oregon?
It's almost the half of Oregon, yeah, I bet. Yeah.
Half of Oregon in land, in square miles.
Square miles.
But the population,
yeah.
In Oregon we have 3.6 million people, and Nepal has?
About 26 million people.
26 million.
Yeah.
But it's not spread evenly. In the mountainous part in the north, the population, I believe, is a little more sparse.
Right.
And then in the south?
South is going to be a little much more, yeah.
Because it's more level and crops can be grown and so on?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so people, what do people grow in the south, and how do they subsist in the more mountainous part of the country? And in Kathmandu, the capital, what do people do?
So majority of people who live in the southern part of Nepal grow crops like basically rice, meal. Those are the basic agricultural things they do in the southern part of Nepal. And Kathmandu basically is a major city, so people are more working on business stuff, like they do import and export businesses. And, well, in the mountainous region, people are now more related to tourism business. But earlier time, there was a trans-Himalayan trade between Tibet and Nepal, so after the tourism took over place, now the tourism is a major industry that is taking place in the Himalayan region of the northern part of Nepal.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, actually, there's still a lot of Nepal where people are just living off the land.
With maybe a few animals. What kind of animals?
Oh, yeah. Yaks are the major animals above 3,000 meters in Nepal.
3,000 meters elevation.
Elevation, yes. 3,000 meters. And then after that, you could find Jobkoks, which are similar to yaks but a little different from yaks. And you, when you go further down to the south, it's similar cows that you see here in America or in Europe or somewhere else.
And the food that's grown, it's for the family that's growing it usually, or maybe trade nearby, but not much in the way of export, really.
No, not much for export.
Not even the rice?
No, not even the rice.
Mm-hmm. Nepal is a poor country, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
It's one of the 10 poorest countries in the world, I think.
Yeah, I've been reading statistics. They're a little bit old, but the average personal income is a little over $1,000 a year. And health conditions are not so good compared to other countries.
Right. Health is the major problem in Nepal because there are so little bit of health care in Nepal, and they're now there's pretty much of NGOs that they are trying to help about healthcare system in Nepal, but basically the rural part of Nepal are lacking a lot of health medication and those kind of things. So that is a major issue in Nepal right now, I bet.
And this may be an old statistic, but I remember reading there was one doctor for every 20,000 people in Nepal.
That's not many, and even if there were more, getting around, getting to the doctor or getting the doctor to you is really not very possible.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, not many roads, especially in the mountainous area. People walk. Most places people go, they walk, right?
Absolutely. I think the roads are not being constructed in those mountainous places because it's kind of impossible for roads to come in those kind of mountains because our landscape is totally kind of really, really stiff. So it's a little problem for constructing roads and stuff, and we lack a lot of money too. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, and also many people don't have electricity even now.
Yeah, many don't. And it was just been like, in those times when I was in the place where I was born, Namche Bazaar, we had electricity for like about 6 hours or so from evening 6 p.m. to say 11 or 12 p.m. in the evening, yeah. So after that, we don't have electricity at all. But now the things have changed a little bit after tourism took over place in the Namche Bazaar and stuff, so we have electricity pretty much now. But in those times, we didn't have a lot of electricity, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about the political history. People probably won't be surprised that the country really wasn't unified with one government until later than most because of the rugged terrain.
Right.
Local families, clans, extended families were sort of their own political world, not that there really needed to be a government in past times. Then the British came. They came to India and other nearby countries, and they tried to
get over Nepal.
Colonize, and it didn't. They just weren't able to do it, right?
They were not, yeah.
They were beaten by the Gurkhas.
Gurkhas being another extended family. I'm using the word clan. That's probably not right.
Actually, the Gurkhas, there's one area of Nepal, Gorkha.
Okay.
And they're the ones who conquered all the rest of Nepal in the 18th century. And that's what made a unified country out of it. And then when the British tried to penetrate, they were beaten back. And they were so... I think they finally prevailed in whatever they were trying to do, but they were so impressed they started taking these people into their own army, and that's
right
why they have the Gurkhas today, the British army.
That's why today, like, British army has British Gurkhas, mm-hmm. which are the militaries from Nepal. So these British Gurkhas work for British army, so, and the UN has a British Gurkhas army too, so those are the Gurkha armies who represented Nepal.
But there was some unification, and the country became a monarchy, right?
Right.
In the late 1800s?
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, I would guess, really in the century before, when it was all conquered, it was basically a monarchy, one big chief running it all.
Mm-hmm.
Like the dynasties and stuff, yeah. Lichabi dynasty, and those were the dynasties when they were like, pretty much king and stuff, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it stayed that way until not so long ago, really. When did things start to change?
Well, I think the first change was in 1950.
Okay.
And there was kind of, this was a time when things were getting more liberal everywhere in the world, and they, there was a mini revolution, and they took the power away from this dynasty that had ruled it for many years. Actually, they weren't as kings, but they were controlling the kings. And then the next thing was 1990, when there was kind of a rebellion against the monarchy, and they ended up with what we thought was a basically constitutional monarchy and a democratic government. And that
is right.
Lasted until, what, 2 years ago.
There was a change. There was a new king in 2001.
Right.
King getting in there, yeah.
Okay.
So after the Royal Massacre.
Yeah, we better explain a little history. This was reported in the U.S. probably because it was bizarre and unusual and violent, but it was certainly more important to Nepalese in a more complex way. In 2001, a member of the royal family, tell us.
Yeah, in 2001, we had a royal massacre where about like all the family of the royal family was massacred. So, what happened?
By a member of their own family.
Yeah, and it was told that the prince of the
Crown Prince,
Dipender had massacred all the. He was the person to be known as a culprit for doing all the massacre, but nobody really knows what it is between that royal massacre because it is kind of mystery still in Nepal.
Mm-hmm.
But after that massacre, just for one day, Crown Prince Dipender was crowned as a king, but he was in a critical condition. So after the next day, after his demise, King Ganadhar was represented as the king of Nepal. So after that, we had King Ganadhar as king in Nepal. Yeah,
and it was still it was a monarchy. He controlled the government.
He controlled the government, and I think it was in 2003. He overtook the power from the political parties, and he wanted to have basic monarchy rule over the kingdom. So that was the huge step taken by him. So after that, there was he blamed seven political parties for not constituting a peace talks between the Maoist and the government. So he wanted to take over and get a peace talks between the Maoist and the government and to hold a peace into the kingdom, which has been going on for about 12 or 13 years now,
Yeah, let's go back a little bit and talk about the Maoists. In the mid-1990s, they became a force to be noticed, to be dealt with, wanting to take over control and have a Maoist government. But they, just like in many other countries, Cuba comes to mind and Vietnam, they started in outside of the capital, and there's been a lot of fighting. And actually, thousands of people were killed from the mid-90s until just very recently in the battles back and forth.
Yeah, I think it's about 15,000 people are being killed.
But one thing I think we ought to say, because people, Maoists sounded so the Chinese were behind this, and the Chinese actually are very much opposed to it. It's these people that are following Mao in that they thought this is going to be a peasants' revolt. And they have mostly taken over in rural areas.
The leader's name is Prachanda.
Prachanda, yeah.
And
Prachanda.
I've read he refers to his version of Maoism as the Prachanda path.
I think so, yeah.
Okay, so the monarchy became an absolute monarchy in about 2003. But earlier this year, in April, people were protesting. Tell us about this.
Yeah, there was a huge protest about what was going into the kingdom, because there was a lot of things which were not being taken care of, because the Maoists have their own way of going, and the political parties have their own way of going. At the same time, the king had overtaken the power. So the people were not having their rights about the country. So what happened was, now they wanted to bring a peace into the country, so they had to fight for that.
Well, I think the there were political parties that had been pushed out of government when mm-hmm. the king took over, and they had been working to get back in power, and they declared a general strike of all Nepal to last, I think, 4 days. Well, this triggered something that was much more than they ever had thought of, and it was not just bringing them back to power. It was people all over the country who wanted to have some kind of a good government, because even under democracy, there was not a good government, very corrupt, and a lot of people were not very happy with it. And so I think that this is, and the Maoists supported this strike. So now the two forces were working together, and the result is that there may be a government that combines them both and is a decent government.
Yeah, in April, the king had to back off. He had to yield some power.
Right. So he had to give up the power, because there was a huge demonstration by the people down in the street. So he had to give up the power just to see that. What the seven political parties comes up with. So the seven political parties, they elected a president as Prime Minister Giriza Prasad Kerala. So he is the Prime Minister right now, leading the seven political parties.
However, what they're planning to do, and what this demonstration was about, is to have a new constitution, elect a new government.
Absolutely.
Have a constituent assembly where they can decide on this constitution, and we
right.
hope it comes out well.
So after it was not considered that Maoist was not taken into part when it was a big revolution down there, but now they are considering Maoist to be a part of the political constitution, so they are working on with the Maoists to get on peace into the kingdom, which is really important for the country right now, because the country is lacking a lot of problem right now. Tourism has been gone down such in a huge extent, and like there are so many people who are displaced of home, and there are so many people who lost their lives and stuff. So
lots of people
I think
just plain left.
This is really important now to have really, really a good talks between the Maoists and the seven political parties.
So everyone who wants to have a stake in these discussions is involved.
Right.
No one
right.
is being kept to the side.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
One of the good things, Nepal is made up of more than 60 separate groups speaking their own language. And then all these different castes, and there are people who are living in virtual slavery. But one of the things about this turning a new page is many of these groups are coming to the fore and wanting to be involved in it. And I think if it all works, Nepal will be a better place.
Well, there's much improvement to be done. We've mentioned poverty, and that the government has been corrupt. You pretty much, if you really wanted something from someone in government, you had to bribe them for many years. And medical help is not very much there. And the human rights situation, no matter who's been in charge, has been pretty bad. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Human rights has been really, really bad in the kingdom. Yeah. I think after the Maoist came into existence, I think the human rights have gotten so low, because there is a lot of war between the militaries and the Maoists, so there are a lot of people who have been displaced, been tortured, been lost their lives and stuff. So it's like really the condition is really critical in Nepal about the human rights. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One aspect of human rights is freedom of the press, which is definitely of interest to many listeners here in KABU. Last November, The king closed down. There had been a burgeoning, growing movement of independent radio. Not much television until very recent years. We'll get back to that in a moment. But radio, first, there was only the government station, and not many people had radios because not many people had electricity. But through the 1990s, many other independent radio stations started. And then in November of last year, the most vocal ones, the most progressive ones, were shut down, just absolutely shut down, and their equipment hauled away in Kathmandu. There's Radio Sagarmatha and others. And after the April protests, some of them are getting back on the air. Is that right?
Right, yeah. Now they're getting into the area.
Yes, and the new provisional government has declared that there's not going to be any restrictions on the media. They're going to, and apparently there are all kinds of different ordinances. And, I mean, this is not as not as easy as just saying no more censorship. It means canceling a lot of different things, but they're planning to do that. They have entirely free press.
In preparation for this conversation, I've been visiting a website called nepalnews.com, and I'll give that at the end again. Very lively, and that particular site also links to many newspapers, both a daily one and a number of weekly ones, and other sources of information. Very lively, open discussion, reporting of what's going on. There's a truth commission right now, which is interrogating the former prime minister. That is the prime minister who reported to the king when it was basically a totalitarian monarchy. Prime minister and a couple of other ministers, they're being questioned. They may be charged with crimes against the people. They're also still working on the Constitution and are they going to call it a House of Representatives like we do in the U.S.?
Yeah.
They do call it.
Interesting. Not the word Parliament.
But so it's been...
I mean, the next thing is a totally new government, the Constituent Assembly. It decides on a new constitution, maybe a different way of governing. I don't know. I mean, the House of Representatives may not be the body that comes out of this, but I'm pretty sure it will be. But
I see. And news reports, now this is from an American Associated Press reporter a couple of days ago, wondering what Prachanda will do now that he, the leader of the Maoists, is involved in the discussions. He's not really being clear on whether he really wants a communist economic system or not, or how much he thinks he can get versus how much he has to compromise or what. So that's all up in the air.
He has said that he will go along with whatever they come up with, and that he does not want the Maoists. He does not expect this to be dominated by the Maoists, the new government.
Very conciliatory.
Whether you believe them or not, I don't know, but that's what he said.
Yeah, this is different from a lot of other countries where there's a crisis over who has the power. Everyone seems to be trying to work together.
Right.
One complication that does happen in these situations, though, is outside influence. We mentioned that the British were not able to take over in the 1800s. There is an influence, certainly a cultural and economic influence, from India, the neighboring country, a giant country. Can you talk a little bit about that and how the culture has been influenced?
Yeah, because the majority of media that we have in Nepal is from India. So we have those cable channels that comes all the way from India. Like we have about 30 channels that come from India. So the major influence of Nepal is based on India compared to China, because we have a lot of stuff that come in from India. And I, just as I said, like the media is a big influence in Nepal from India. So we have those big movies in movie industries from India that we watch. And everything that is being watched in Indian channels are a huge influence of thing in Nepal. Yeah,
mm-hmm. And the religion in Nepal, again, 75% to 80% of the people are Hindus.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Similar to, you know, Hindus.
Yeah, so it's basically similar to, like, when you think about the lower division of Nepal are basically going to be more of a Indian people, because they're the way they look, the way they behave, everything is trended from India, I would say. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you think about the northern part, possibly like where I was born, it looks more of a Tibetan or say a Chinese look, which has a different kind of following of cultures and stuff. Like, I believe in Buddhism. Like, so Buddhism came from Tibet, or say, like, it's related to Tibet or something, yeah?
And India's by far the major trading partner. I mean, Nepal is really quite dependent on India. And when the Indians objected to the kings taking over the government and withheld aid, as did the U.S., and at that point, the king turned to China, and they were establishing all these ties before, but now that's canceled, I think.
What you mentioned the U.S., and we have to, as American citizens, our listeners have to wonder, has the U.S. played really a significant role, and should it play a role in the future in Nepal?
It has given a fair bit of aid money, and I'm sorry I can't tell you how much. And mostly this has gone to, developing to the development. But when in the height of the Maoist conflict, then we labeled the Maoist terrorists, and this we're at war with terrorists all over the world. So a lot of this aid was going to the army, but then I think they canceled that when the king took over, and I don't know whether they at least have talked about withdrawing the label terrorist now. But now I think we're very supportive of this new movement.
Right. So U.S. is supporting for the new movement a lot, yeah.
And also resuming aid.
Are there many American companies, products sold retail, or any factories, American factories there yet?
Certainly see Coca-Cola and things like that, but it's coming from India. I don't know.
Yeah, that's right.
What the American connection is. I'm sure Coca-Cola's got a worldwide empire, but
yeah,
it comes to Nepal through India.
Are there any other questions that I should be asking you, anything that you think is important for people to know about Nepal, just in general, or about the recent developments?
I think you should tell them what the Sherpas are.
Yes, I meant to ask this. Many Americans think that the word Sherpa means porter, bearer, someone who helps an American mountain climber carry his load, and that's just wrong. Can you explain?
Oh, yeah. Actually, Sherpa is a tribal group in Nepal, so we have about like 65 different ethnic groups in Nepal, so it's one of the ethnic groups in Nepal. So Sherpa actually doesn't really, Sherpa is a transformation of Sherwa. Sherwa is like, in Tibetan it means a people from east. So those, our ancestors migrated from eastern part of Tibet called Kham. Now today, Sherpas are more related to tourism business as they live towards the mountainous region of Nepal. So they are engaged in a lot of tourism activities. So hence, as they are being more active in the mountainous region, they've been termed as differently by the Westerners now. So I think that's a little bit of a misconception, because when I was in Europe, I heard a lot of people asking me a lot of questions about, like, hey, how many loads can you carry up to? I was like, what? How many loads? I think I barely can carry my own load. So it was like a little bit of misconception, you know? So I think that's pretty much to say about it is like Sherpa is a travel group who is engaged in tourism activities. More of the Sherpas are engaged in tourism activities. So that is what Sherpa is all about, yeah?
Okay. If people want more information about what's going on in Nepal, I will repeat, there is one website that I know, Nepal News. It's NEPALNEWS.com.
And I think
other sources?
Yeah, there is another. Yeah, there is NepalDemocracy.org. That is also an important website I would consider, because they talk about human rights in Nepal and those civic education and those a lot of things about what is going on in Nepal. I think that is really a good website to look around for people who are interested in Nepal.
Subscribe to my newsletter.
Okay, tell us about that, Bob.
This started a number of years back. You know, basically, we don't get news from Nepal here in our newspapers unless the whole royal family gets shot. And because I'd been there and I was interested, I started subscribing to English-language newspapers from Nepal. And various people said, when you're through with that, give it to me. And there were so many of them that I thought, instead of doing this, I'll just put out a little informal newsletter. So I've been doing this for quite a while, and if you're lucky, you get it. For the subscription, I tell them that it's $20 for 6 issues or possibly more, but I don't say when they're coming out.
Well, how can people contact you?
Well, all I can say, give my address. It's about the only thing. And it's 4621 Southwest Kelly. And that's Portland 97201.
And address that to Robert Pierce.
Yeah. Or News from Nepal.
News from Nepal. Okay. Yeah. That's the name of the newsletter. Well, Bob Pierce and Pemba Sherpa, I want to thank you very much for coming into KBOO and letting us know what's going on in Nepal. It seems to be a very exciting time there, and there seems to be a lot of reason for hope that the country will move into the present and that conditions will be better.
Thank you.
We hope so.
We hope so.
Thanks again. This is Bruce Silverman. Thank you.